Thanks, Dan, for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to chat with us. I'm just wondering if maybe we can start off by, giving yourself a quick little introduction, who you are and what you do at J&E and what your work experience background is.
Yeah. Well, as you know, my name is Dan Burkett. I'm part of the piping group here at J&E as a design lead. My experience is well over 15 years in the water wastewater industry, having designed and built a number of water and wastewater treatment systems and plants, everything ranging from, small control systems for zebra mussel control to full-fledged drinking water systems that would service over 1,500 people at a time on small water treatment systems, dealing with the Ministry of the Environment in obtaining approvals for wastewater applications, as well as doing some simulations on effluent discharges.
So since joining J&E, you've been involved in a number of projects. Given your extensive background, a lot of them have been related to water. Recently, you've been involved in taking a conceptual engineering report and turning it into something a little more constructible, I guess, if you will. I was wondering if you could kind of set up, what was the situation there?
Well, one of our customers or clients is having some issues with their plant effluent. Their pH levels in their processed wastewater are too high, which doesn't meet their local municipality's bylaw discharge limits. So they've done some research and evaluations of alternative solutions to solving their pH issues and had come up with a basic solution, but have not proceeded to detailed design. We were brought in to finalize the detailed design, and in doing so, discovered a number of things that were kind of missing in the original assessments. One of the key things that was omitted in the preliminary design was establishing what the exact water flows were within the system, not just the average flows as read by their municipal water takings, as from their municipal water meter. So the client would take their dailies and just kind of get an idea how much their average daily flows were. But the proposed system that they were going to design, though, would have to take into account the actual peak flows or peak hourly flows. As you can have instances where certain processes in the physical plant can discharge water at much higher rates than your average flows. So I had come in and taken a look at that and had come up with some ideas on how we can establish that. The client had previously installed weir plates within some of their effluent manholes, and that had developed some data, but the data was never really consistent. They would have issues with plugging and other fouling of the meters themselves. So the data wasn't exactly the most reliable. I had suggested using velocity area flow meter, which essentially is a small probe that you can install in a gravity sewer that measures both the level of water in the pipe as well as the actual velocity. And from that, the meter can actually calculate the instantaneous flow rates and then record it on a 5-minute interval. So with that, I was able to actually establish what the peak flows were and how long, and I can actually record how long they occur for. So I was starting to see peak flows that were 4.5-5 times greater than their average flows. Coincidentally, this did fall in line with what the original estimates were from the previous work, but now we were actually able to confirm it. That being said, however, the client was saying that their original estimates, though, on their side, were actually a fifth of what we were seeing. So there was always some conflicting anecdotal evidence or anecdotal comments about what the flows actually were. So it was actually great to get empirical evidence of how the system was actually operating. And it kind of allowed the client to see what their activities were in that system. The entire project so far has been interesting. I mean, we performed site walks to go through the site top to bottom. I would bring equipment that actually allowed me to remove manhole covers, and I'd actually get to the crux of their system and look in. And doing so, I discovered that their stormwater catch basins were connected to their sanitary sewers, which has now come to a bit of a DCN on their side of actually correcting those things. As you can normally you cannot discharge your stormwater to a sanitary, as it's against their local bylaws. So that's been also corrected. Now, there was a certain bit of a cost. This was a price adder to the overall project, and it did delay things as we had to perform a 2 to 3 week additional study to determine things. But I think it was absolutely invaluable in helping solidify the overall final design of the system.
So it's kind of, you took the time to go out and define the problem leading into it, further define it from what the previous report had said. We all know that a well-defined problem is 50% solved. So from what you uncovered during your site walks and your discovery, how did you, knowing what the client's end goal was, what did you do to solve the problem then?
Well, I mean, problem was, like you said, in determining what the overall, to gather all your evidence, helps to solve 50% of the problem. The remainder was essentially just typical engineering work where we perform all our calculations. We review, you know, we review how we're going to actually finalize the design. I mean, the majority of the work was, you know, 50-60% complete. It was just a matter of establishing the scale or the quantity. We know the quality of the water that we have to hit. It's a matter of establishing the quantity. Once the quantity can be determined, then your size of piping, your pump specs can all be then determined after that. So that's the easy part. The hardest part I always found on a project is actually establishing your parameters and what you're supposed to work within, which is always the most important thing. But sometimes it also gets lost in the forest, so to speak.
So as you kind of further establish those parameters, were you able to take what the previous report had estimated as, you know, the client needs to invest X amount of dollars into their water treatment plant in order to achieve those desired parameters for where you, they need the water to be or the effluent to be?
Well, in this particular case, I think what we were able to do is we didn't have to make any major changes to the overall system design with regards to the quantity of our flows. However, you know, looking back at it too, I kind of reviewed the previous hydraulic work that was done on it, and looking at it, we were able to actually remove a single pump station to help reduce the cost and complexity of the system, as well as some additional effluent pumps that were originally selected. After determining what the flows were going to be, we can then figure out the hydraulics. Once the hydraulics were determined, we were able to further reduce the capital costs that were going to be involved in this overall system.
So they would have had some sort of reason to include the additional effluent pumps and everything like that. Now that they've removed it, have they lost anything from the design, anything from capabilities?
No, that's the amazing thing. I mean, because the preliminary design didn't have a lot of the information, the, you know, pumps were added and pump stations were added just to kind of cover off any risk to the construction of the project or the implementation of the project. But I mean, with good information up front, we were able to kind of simplify things. My philosophy has always been, always take what you think you need and then reduce it. Operations never likes to have more equipment. As soon as you add more complexity to a thing, you have, you know, more points of failure and absolutely a lot more maintenance and, you know, future headaches that you have to deal with. In my past life, I was fortunate to work with a good operations group and good operations managers, and understanding what their normal day-to-day lives are like. And if you can kind of make their lives easier, it just becomes kind of win on two sides. A, you make your operations people happier so that, you know, they're more succinct into helping you with your whatever issues you have down the road. If they're too busy fixing problems you gave them, then they'll be a lot less likely to help you out with the problems that you may have. Secondly, you know, when it comes to operational expenses, I mean, more equipment with maintenance, you know, and replacement and capital upgrades and operational costs with respect to electricity, hydro. You can also look at it from an environmental standpoint. We're now living in a world where we're trying to reduce our carbon footprints and whatnot. So if we can reduce some of our energy consumptions, that's always a good thing. And so looking at the project as a whole and talking with the clients more, after the fact, we were able to remove a lot of that equipment, as well as actually remove the need for an overall treatment building. The original design called for a building, but after looking at the available spaces, walking down the site, and understanding what the original plan for the project was, we were actually able to kind of remove that aspect from them too. So, you know, we were able to save a lot of money, time, and effort on this new project.
Give us an order of magnitude in terms of what you think they were ultimately able to save.
I think we were able to, you know, probably cut the, well, it's this day and age when it comes to estimated costing, it's always out to lunch because of, you know, post-COVID and, and inflation, right? Like, whatever you think it is, just add another 20%. I would imagine whatever the project cost was going to be, all things being equal, we probably cut it in half or more.
That's quite the savings. I bet you their management were like, oh, you told us it was going to be, you know.
Yeah.
$2 million, now it's only $1 million. Oh, we're going to do this for sure, hopefully.
Hopefully. Well, yeah, I'm always scared. Like, you know, sometimes I can still bite you because, you know, something was going to cost me, yeah, $2 million. That's going to cost me $1 million. Well, we stopped all these other projects because we had to pay for this project. And now, you know, we lost money in the opportunity on those projects. So yeah. One of those things that always, you know, makes me nervous in that respect. But I mean, if you can cut, yeah, listen, I don't think anybody will ever argue about having to save money.
Yeah,
and complexity. Those are the two major things. Whenever I start a project, I always one thing people always forget to talk about is, you know, the capital costs and the operational costs. You know, people will say, I have a problem. Okay, well, how do you want me to address this problem? Do you want me to address this problem from a capital standpoint or from an operational standpoint? Because the fun thing about wastewater is that wastewater is always a cost adder. You know, you can have a client who makes a widget, and their job is to make the widget. All waste processes that come off from making that widget is an added cost, right? It doesn't make money. That's why clients typically don't look at wastewater too closely. They don't want to focus on something that doesn't make money.
Nobody wants to talk about what's going on in the bathroom, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, all they know is the cost, and they just accept it as a cost of doing business. And because they don't understand it, there's nothing they can do about it, and they just accept it. However, I mean, it takes somebody to examine it, find efficiencies, reduce overall burdens on operators. I mean, you know automation. I mean, automation adds absolute complexity, and some people will throw so much at automation at something where, you know, it may just need somebody to come by and flick a switch once in a while. Or all this automation's added for the sake of it, and it adds more complexity and failure, where you could have maybe do something a little bit more basic. However, you could also add a lot of automation in there to help reduce operator burden. But it all comes down to is, you know, having an understanding what the problem is, but also looking outside of that problem and seeing what that problem is also being affected by, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, what else is affecting it? Seeing it, you know, looking outside the box to figure out what other outside factors could be affected by eliminating that problem, or how you can bundle that solution to something else to find efficiencies in your overall problem solving. So that's always the fun and the challenge.
Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time out to chat with us and talk about, you know, what you've got going on and the problems that you're solving on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, breaking down your first principles of how to solve it. Kind of got me thinking about, you know, I read in, I think it was Elon Musk's, he's got his four first principles, you know, what are the physics, how much does it cost, how can we do it cheaper, how much does it cost, kind of a thing, right? So it's, you know, it's always great to hear someone who thinks about it from a first principles perspective of, is it a capital cost or is it an operation cost? Do we actually need the parameter? Like, are the assumptions that were used previously correct? Is that actually what's going on in the real world? Or is it, you know, are we just living in a fantasy world thinking that everything is okay in the bathroom?
Well, that's it. I think a lot of people, I mean, a lot of engineers, they'll put in a gigantic pump just so they know they can have absolutely no risk in it not achieving its goals, right? I guessed on this. I will use the biggest hammer to put in that finishing nail. And, and it will work. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, if you're trying to swing that big hammer and you got 1,000 finishing nails put in, you're going to get pretty tired pretty quickly. So maybe you don't need to be swinging that big hammer. Smart design. If you look at the overall, you're an energy guy. Mm-hmm. So you have a pump that's 5 horsepower too large, and it runs 24/7. And you look at 5 horsepower with the power consumption, what it takes to power 5 horsepower and all the equipment. Well, just on an operational standpoint, you're looking at like what, $10,000, $20,000 a year to power that? And that asset runs for 10 years?
It does start to add up, especially if you consider it's like a 24/7 operation pump, right? You know, some people think, oh, you know, this pump's only running 8 hours a day, but still 8 hours a day is 2,080 hours a year, right?
Exactly. And so, I mean, that's the thing. And then, you know, now that we have, carbon taxes and environmental motivations.
I read somewhere that no longer is it going to be, you know, how intelligent the workforce is. Like, we're approaching kind of that asymptote of how much labor actually impacts the cost of something, and we're transitioning to something where it's more how much energy impacts the cost of things.
These are all things to start considering in the new economies.
Yep, exactly. So, well, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
And all right.
Hopefully we continue to get some good work out of you.
For sure.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan.
Have a good one, guys.